to another beautiful Thursday morning. This is Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm sorry about that technical difficulty for a moment, but I'm happy to be here with all of you. Last night was my third Zoom cooking class, which I am offering every Wednesday night during this pandemic. And it's really been so much fun to welcome in people that I know and people that I don't know, but to inspire people to get back to cooking. As all of you who do know me and what I'm about, I really am about sharing the love with food and the way food brings people together. Even when you can't physically be together, you can be together now in this Zoom platform, and it's just really wonderful. We had over 30 people with us last night in the cooking class. And one of the recipes that we made last night, I'll be sharing with you in just a little bit. But first, I want to talk to you about some things, other things going on. Of course, we're all still quarantining and keeping our social distancing while working from home or not working from home. And if you're not working from home and you have a lot of extra time on your hands, what are you doing to fill that time? Gardening is one wonderful way if you do have access to outdoors. I've been getting out into my garden quite a bit, but the weather's not been so wonderful. So that's an on and off thing. But one thing I've started doing, or I just did this past week, is make sourdough bread, which I've never done before. I've always wanted to do it. And because it's so time consuming, not that it actually takes a lot of time, but you have to do it over many days. So you have to be able to be home and plan and, you know, attend to something every 30 minutes and then attend to another part in another 2 hours and come back to it, you know, the next morning. And so, you know, it's constant for a few days. And so this opportunity of being at home presented itself, and I finally got to make some sourdough bread, and that was really wonderful. So I posted that on my website if you want to see some pictures. And if you want to try making some sourdough bread, this is a really great time to do that. I also have been trying to coordinate food for those in need. I, as you know, am the farm-to-school coordinator at Glen Cove Public School, and the cafeteria ladies have continued providing lunches for the school kids and breakfast that families are picking up every day. But on Wednesdays, the school district and some dedicated teachers have put together a food pantry that is providing food to the larger community on Wednesdays. And I had heard through Slow Food that there was an organization called Italians Feed America that just formed to try to bring some food to people in need. And I drove out to Jersey City on Friday and picked up hundreds of pounds of beautiful pasta and some risotto rice and some marinara sauce and brought that to the pantry yesterday, as well as made arrangements for 150 freshly out of the brick oven pizzas delivered to the school. And they handed out 150 pizzas yesterday to those people that are in need. And it's just amazing the goodwill that's coming out of this. I mean, there's so many unfortunate things that we're seeing in the news of, you know, people or corporations taking money that they really shouldn't have from small mom and pop shops in this, in the people protection plan that, you know, the government put out, and people, you know, trying to monetize the pandemic to their advantage. But on the other side, there are thousands and thousands of examples of people stepping up to the plate and putting themselves out there and trying to make this situation better for everybody. And so those are the people I really want to highlight and put a shout out to. Of course, all the healthcare workers and all the farm workers and the laborers and the truck drivers and the grocery store people, everybody who's really stepping up to the plate and making this situation bearable for the rest of us. I wrote about the farm workers and the, you know, the organic farmers, especially in New York and across the country, who really need support. They really need your support. And NOFA New York, which is the local Northeast Organic Farming Association, due to this pandemic and due to, what was going on even before that, the farmers really need some support, and our organization needs some support so that we can hire a full-time policy person and really work to protect the standards that are written to protect the organic movement. As you can imagine, the big food corporations who have bought up the small organic companies, those big corporations are trying to weaken the organic standards so that they can allow more and more non-organic items and products into our organics, and to weaken those standards. And we are working really hard with the Northeast Organic Farming Association to fight those standards and to be an influencer in writing the policies that protect our organic market. And so we need help and we need your support. So if you are not a member of NOFA New York, please go on their website at NOFA, N-O-F-A dot N-Y dot org, and join NOFA New York. Become a member, donate some money, because we really need your support at this time. And there's also ways to support farm workers. A few weeks ago I was writing about and talking about all the crops that the farmers that were plowing under the fields, because they just didn't have workers to harvest it, and they also didn't have a market to sell it in, because during this pandemic, with restaurants and universities and schools closed, it seems that people are not at home cooking vegetables. They'll cook a box of pasta, but they're not making the side dish of vegetables. And so we really need everyone to start cooking vegetables. But in the meantime, all these vegetables are just getting plowed under. And so I'm happy to say now that the U.S. government has come up with a new plan to help support farmers. It's called Farmers to Families Food Box Program. And they're actually purchasing some of this produce from farms and putting it, and having those people put it into boxes and creating boxes for those people that are in need. And so it's called the Farmers to Families Food Box Program. And you can read about that on my website at iegreen.com. And so that's really a great thing. So I want to share with you my recipe that I made yesterday. It's a matzo paneer. And then I also want to introduce my guest this week, who will be Carrie Weiss. She is a consultant to the food industry and a chef herself, and I'll tell you more about her in just a moment when she comes on. But first, my recipe this week was a matzo paneer. Last night in our cooking class, we made a whole Indian dinner, so matzo paneer was just one part of it. We also made saffron rice and a coconut vegetable curry, and you'll be able to find those recipes on my website too. But the matzo paneer, which is a vegan take on matzo paneer. Matzo paneer is normally made with an Indian cheese, which is the paneer. And I substitute the cheese for some tofu. So I start with a cake of tofu that I press between a towel, as always, to just take out some of the moisture. And then I cut it into cubes. And I put those cubes into a bowl, and I tossed it with some garlic, fresh minced garlic, some fresh minced ginger, some cumin powder, some turmeric, a little curry powder, and just toss that so that you're coating the tofu with all these herbs and spices. And then lay it out onto a cookie sheet that is lined with parchment paper that you've sprayed with a little oil. And put it into a 375-degree oven for about 10 minutes or so, 10 to 15 minutes. Just check on it. You want the tofu to start getting a crispy crust on the outside and to absorb some of those spices that you put in there. So you're just going to let that be in the oven for about 10 to 15 minutes while we start on the other part of the recipe. And so while that's cooking, you're going to pull out your cast iron frying pan, or you could do it in a stock pot, about 2 to 3 tablespoons of coconut oil. The traditional recipe would call for ghee, but because I'm doing this vegan, I use coconut oil, which works wonderfully. And in that oil, you're going to put 2 tablespoons of finely chopped fresh ginger root and 1 tablespoon of garlic. And then you're going to add 1 cup of chopped onions to that. And you're going to saute that for a few minutes just to let those spices start smelling really delicious. And you're going to cook those onions up now till they become translucent for about 7 or 8 minutes or so. And you just want to adjust the heat so that you don't let it burn. So you want to lower the heat a little bit and just cook that up. You're going to now add the spices, 1 teaspoon of turmeric, 1/4 teaspoon of cumin, 1 teaspoon of salt, 1/4 teaspoon of ground coriander, and just mix that up. And by sauteing the spices, you really bring out a lot of the flavor there. You're toasting the herbs or the spices, and it really, you'll be able to smell all the deliciousness right there. Then I'm going to add 2 cans of diced tomatoes to the recipe. And you can use fire-roasted diced tomatoes or regular diced tomatoes, and those are the smaller cans, or you can use 1 large 28-ounce can if you prefer. And then you're going to add 1 bag of frozen organic peas to that. If you can get fresh peas, great, about 2 cups of fresh peas, or a 10-ounce, or my bag actually was a 16-ounce bag of frozen peas, and add that to it. And just let that simmer for a bit. Then you can pull the tofu out of the oven, add that into the pan, and that's going to then absorb all of those spices and the juices from the canned tomatoes into the tofu. And just put a cover on that and let that simmer for about 10 minutes. And then you're going to add 1 tablespoon of garam masala. And garam masala is an Indian spice mixture that has, you know, a lot of aromatic spices to it. It has some cinnamon and some cloves and some coriander, and it's just delicious, and that really gives this dish a lot of its flavor. And then you're going to add also 3 tablespoons of finely chopped fresh coriander, which is the same thing as cilantro, and it's also the same thing as Chinese parsley. And I know I love telling people that fresh coriander, cilantro, and Chinese parsley are all the same thing. And you're going to add 3 tablespoons of that. If you don't like cilantro, which many people unfortunately don't like it, for some people it's a genetic thing. It actually tastes like soap. But if you don't like that, you can put in some parsley. But the chopped green herb just adds a nice little bit of color to the dish, and so you want to add that. And the dish is just beautiful. It's bright red with green and white tofu cubes, and it's just a delicious dish. So make that. I recommend serving it with some delicious saffron rice and another curry dish on the side, and it's just a great, great thing. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you my guest this week, who is Carrie Weiss. She's an international culinary professional with a creative flair and passion for food. She's proficient in vegan cooking, raw vegan cooking, vegetarian, kosher, French, Spanish, and Middle Eastern cuisines, as well as Italian, Greek, Asian, and other global fare. 8 years ago, due to personal medical issues, Carrie's focus switched from all of her culinary international diets to food as medicine. And that's become a main part of her work now. She's an expert in clean cuisine and the elimination diet. And then this past September, after being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, Carrie began following a special protocol to reverse her diabetes and completely change the way she ate. She is now passionate about combining her culinary skills with her knowledge about food as medicine and helping other people reverse their own metabolic health issues. And she's currently working with an integrative MD in southern New Jersey at the Chung Institute Center for Metabolic Healing, while also co-authoring a book on metabolic healing. And so it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you Carrie Weiss. Carrie, you with me?
I'm very well, thank you. Enjoying this
Good.
Nice gloomy day.
I know, I know. But inside
I
it's
love
beautiful.
The rain. It is. I love the rain.
Yeah, well, that's good. The garden certainly loves the rain. So I wanted to just ask you to give us a little bit about your history, because when I was looking at your resume, I actually noticed you didn't actually go to culinary school, but you have so much culinary training. So maybe you could just share with us how you got started in a career in food.
Okay, do you have a few hours? I don't think so. Okay, so I'll try to make it short and sweet. I'm very wordy, so cut me off if necessary. So how did it start? I really think it's in my genes, and I didn't have a choice. I'll just go back about 100 years or more to my great-great-great-grandmother, who was a healer in her village in Russia. And people used to come to her with their medical problems and emotional problems, and she would heal them with food and herbs and advice. I'm actually named after her. So that's another story. But how did it come about? As you said, I really didn't go to a formal culinary school, but at a very young age, I started getting into food. I grew up in a house where life was people, and that was what was talked about in my house. And food was love, like you say. And if I skinned my knee, I would have a few carrots or celery to make me feel better. In my home, we ate very healthy. And we were always into eating and food and people, and there were always many guests in my home. And my mother actually used to watch Julia Child in the 60s and early 70s. And that book, Julia and Julia, well, that could have been my mother's story. My mother loved France, and she didn't want to marry my father. She wanted to go to France. But my mother loved everything French. She spoke French. She had studied it in school and started watching Julia on TV and doing all her recipes. My grandparents had a restaurant before I was born. My grandmother and my mother were amazing cooks. I call them cooks. They weren't chefs. And I grew up eating food. And when I was in my early teens, my family moved to the south of France. And once you taste the food in France, it's very hard to go back. And I learned about regional cooking. And really, before it was in vogue, I got to see what was happening in Europe, which came here eventually, but people ate locally and seasonally. And I lived in an area where there were great restaurants and lots of markets with a mother who was keen to cook and learn more. So she, with a group of other Americans and British, used to have a French woman come to the house and teach them cooking. And when I got home from school, just in time to sample the food. And so I tasted this food. It was amazing. And I just never went back. And go forward a few years when I was in college, I cooked for all my friends because I think I had some kind of palate. I just could taste things and reproduce them. And I also was lucky to eat in a lot of amazing restaurants. And I would always ask the chefs for the recipes. And they would give it to me. And so I learned to cook, and I started to have a great love for cooking in France. Let's go forward. I went to college. I'd always invite people over to make these exotic foods that nobody had tasted. Now, when I grew up in the 60s and 70s, people didn't go out to eat a lot. There were Chinese restaurants and maybe Italian for pizza or lasagna. Parents did not take their kids out to eat. McDonald's came, and that was nothing for us. My parents said, oh, crap, hazari, if you know that word. We weren't allowed to go to McDonald's. We were never allowed to eat fast food. The food in my house was always healthy and fresh. Okay, back to college, I was always cooking. I went to school to work in the State Department or the FBI. I had this international background. I lived in France for years, thought I would be like an ambassador and go live in Paris, something like Julia's life with her husband. That didn't happen. When I graduated, it was the Iranian hostage crisis. My dad said, why do you want to work for the government? Anyway, to make a long story short, I ended up in New York City, always in sales and had great jobs. And was very successful, met my husband, got married, had kids, was always cooking for everybody, always liked food, was always a foodie. And when my second son was born, he had some issues, and I had to stop work. I stayed home to heal him and take him to lots of doctors. He turned out fine, But when he was doing better, I needed to do something, and I didn't want to go back to the traditional workforce. So I started cooking, and I was inviting people over, all the women in school, for lunch, because I didn't know these women. I had been working, and everybody loved my food. I was cooking French food, food from Provence. I was a Francophile by then, and my whole house was French. I had tablecloths and all kinds of things I would bring back from France. So I would cook these meals, and people would come, and they said, we want to pay you. Can you teach us? And so I started teaching classes. Those women never came, but other people did, and I'd have a full house with a waiting list. And the only place to buy cooking things around me was Williams-Sonoma. And so I would go to Williams-Sonoma regularly and buy all kinds of things, and one of them was sea salt. As a matter of fact, I used to buy all the sea salt when it came in. It was the only place to get it that I knew. Fast forward, the regional director met me and said, we're opening this store in New York, and we want you to teach classes. And I'm like, you can't afford me. It's too much work. Anyway, I threw out some number, plus I got a big discount. I started teaching at Williams-Sonoma. And then I got in a few magazines. One was a local magazine. And after that, I got lots of phone calls from restaurants and people and companies asking me to work with them. And I started doing different things. I worked for a company that supplied frozen vegetables to chefs in New York because they couldn't get fresh produce in the winter. I mean, to top chefs. They also supplied food to this little store called, what was it called? What's that store? Oh, gosh, my brain. Anyway, it's the store that you go to now that's very cheap. What's the store? It's the chain.
TJ Maxx?
No, not TJ Maxx. It's food. You know, Trader Joe's. This little store called Trader Joe's. It was one in New Jersey. They sold packaged foods. The company was called White Talk. They hired me to go into the city to these very well-known chefs, French chefs. I spoke French. I won't say who they are. To show them the benefits of string that come from Italy. Fresh, flash, frozen. They were not getting things from farmers back then. Anyway, that was a really cool gig. And I started getting jobs from restaurants because my husband would tell everybody what a great chef I was. He ate out for a living because he'd have to take clients. They'd say, oh, we're having problems. Our menu's boring. They'd say, call my wife. She can make a French menu. Anyway, I got jobs at restaurants without being a chef, without taking classes at culinary institutes. There weren't that many back then. There was the one in Hyde Park, maybe a holistic one in New York. So I started getting all these restaurants in New York. Some of them were kosher, and I wasn't kosher at the time. And so I understood, though, the kosher laws, and I would bring all these great flavor profiles to these restaurants that usually just had very boring food. So I started getting a lot of restaurants, and then I got written up in a magazine. I aren't even going back. No, that magazine had already happened. Okay, so here's what happened. I'm going to be fast, or we're never going to get to the rest of the questions. My husband saw this TV show called Chopped. We watched it a few times. My husband said, you have to be on this. I said, I don't like being on TV. I'm going to look fat. He said, no, you have to. He filled out the form and was about to send it in. I said, what you're writing is fiction. I know you think I'm a great chef, but don't make it up. So I filled it out, sent it in. Somehow they got me on the show. It was the second season. I didn't know that much about it. I went on the show. It was an experience. And because of that show, I started getting tons of work. I won't get into the show, but I became friends with the people there. They were all lovely. And they took me as kind of a home cook. But back up, I've done many stage or internships all over France. That was my hobby. I've been doing that since the early 80s. So I do kind of
know how to cook. How did you get your experience with vegan cooking and raw cooking, because I know you're also really proficient in that. Where did that experience come from?
Well, that started after, I always ate healthy, and I always went to vegan and vegetarian restaurants, just because I always liked more vegetables than protein. So what happened was about 8 years ago, I wasn't feeling well. I had a loss in my family that left me very depressed. And I was just not feeling myself. I was usually pretty fit, never had to worry about weight. And all of a sudden, I was bloated. I was getting headaches. I was really depressed. I think most of it came from the depression. And I was in an airport, and I happened to see a book called The Clean by Dr. Alejandro Younger. It had just come out. So I bought this book and devoured it. And it talked about when heal yourself using something called the elimination diet. And it talked about getting rid of lots of foods and just having like no sugar, no gluten, no processed foods, no coffee, no wine, nothing. Just eating basically and trying to eat organic and sustainably. And so I thought it was almost impossible. Nobody was talking about cleansing, and he had this cleanse. Like my yoga teacher talked about it, but this book had it all down to a science. And this Dr. Younger was saying, Gwyneth Paltrow did it, the Kardashians did it, Drew Barrymore. He seemed really cool, and I liked his story. He was a doctor that moved to New York, very healthy, from Uruguay, and then he went on this cleanse because he was, oh, first of all, he got very sick living in New York. He was stressed out and taking a lot of drugs and for all his problems. He was feeling so sick, he left and decided to go to India, where he met all these people in India that talked about cleansing and all these things you could do. And so he came back and started working with individuals to heal them, and he got a lot of support. He became famous, wrote a book. Anyway, I wanted to do this, but it seemed daunting because nobody had done this before. So I said to my husband, let's do it. He goes, forget it. We can't do this. You had to buy all his supplements. It was one of these things that you see everywhere now. This was like pre-Hyman out in the media, Dr. Hyman. So anyway, mm-hmm. I let it sit. Then my husband read the book a couple months later and said, we're doing this. But I didn't know how to collect all these things. So anyway, I called his office and said, can I come see you? He said, no, you know, what's your story? And I think he only saw celebrities, so I was turned off. But decided to do it anyway and embarked on this diet with him, really this regime of cleansing. And I felt like $1 million. I lost some bloating. I felt great. But then it came back again. And then I called Dr. Younger. I became friends with him on the phone. He would never see me. He ended up helping me on the phone.
When you say it came back again, did it come back again because you went off the diet?
No, I kept up eating this way with his shakes and everything. So I ended up forming a relationship with him. And on the phone, he would ask me a gazillion questions. He's a functional doctor. Functional doctors ask you a lot of questions. They don't just give you drugs. They spend time with you. So he took an interest in me for some reason because I have a persuasive personality. Anyway, he ended up helping me and sent me to a doctor in New York who diagnosed me with parasites. And then I've been on a healing journey since then and realized that your body is always changing. We always have different things. I learned about healing with mind, body, spirit, meaning you have to be like relaxed, have some kind of spiritual practice or believe in something. That's the mind part. The body is what you put in your mouth, food as medicine. That's my big thing, and I've been into it a long time. Basically, what you put in is how you're going to feel. Mind, body, and spirit. Well, the spirit part is whatever you believe in. I mean, but the body part, too, is working out and being healthy. So basically, you have to have a healthy diet. You have to exercise and move. And you have to believe that there's something bigger than you, whether it be just mindful of the world around you and be aware of what's happening on the planet, which we all know now we're being forced to do if we're lucky and we realize it. Anyway, so that got me into it. But the road has gone on, and I've had different issues. And I used to think the elimination diet was the be-all, end-all. And because of that, I decided to take these courses in raw veganism, and I tried to go plant-based on top of this clean diet. And I did that for a while, but I ended up quite sick because the problem I had was in my gut, and I could not eat all the carbohydrates and beans and lectins and things that this clean diet told me to eat. And so the journey went on, and it led me to lots of different doctors, holistic doctors, doctors all over the world to try to get better. I really was not feeling well. I was constantly bloated. I had IBS, brain fog, all kinds of things. I ended up at a place called the Chung Institute in southern New Jersey, where they were integrative doctors, meaning combining functional medicine and lots of different holistic approaches, acupuncture, muscle testing, along with heavy-duty testing of your blood to find out what's wrong. They also spent a lot of time with me like a functional doctor, finding out what was going on. And this has been my last stop. They helped heal me of all my symptoms, of everything that I had. And they all believed in, the doctors there believed in food as medicine. But last September, I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, which runs in my family, and I knew it. I was always pre-diabetic, but after a summer of kind of going off the diet and having bad oils, sugar, and way too much gluten, which I am gluten sensitive or whatever that means. I don't normally eat gluten, not, and I think I'm sensitive not because of my makeup, but because of the glyphosate, but that's another story. I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes and totally flipped out. I had people in my family pass from it. I had people overcome it. My grandfather, who lived to his 90s, overcame it by eating just vegetables and protein. A doctor in the 1930s said you can take insulin, but it might kill you. We don't know how to measure it. My grandmother said, forget it. What can I do, really? The smart doctor in the 1930s, this is before the food pyramid, said to my grandmother, no sugar, no carbs. He can have baked potato. He can have salt, protein, and vegetables. Well, my grandfather lived to 96. And then he died of something crazy. He probably would have been way over 100. He also walked a lot and exercised. So basically, this at the Chung Institute, when I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, I also had been to two other doctors, my cardiologist, an integrative non-invasive cardiologist at Chung Institute, and an internist who took my insurance. Okay? All three of them heard about the type 2 diabetes at the same time. I had been researching all kinds of diets and protocols, and when they all called me in the same day and said, you have type 2 diabetes, they all answered me when I said, what about this protocol that I had heard about? Dr. Jason Chung. And he had written a book called the Diabetes Code. Bottom line. So they all knew about it. The Chung Institute has a doctor that works there by the name of Dr. Andrew Aswari. And one of the doctors that had called me about it said, you got to talk to Andrew. So I went down, talked to Andrew, and Andrew has led me through this protocol with his own spin. And basically, I reversed my type 2 diabetes in 3.5 months. Along with it, I completely reversed a fatty liver. All my cholesterol numbers came down. They weren't crazy. I don't worry about cholesterol. But my sugar was through the roof. I could have gone into a coma. It went my A1C, which is what you should all test for your sugar. It's very important to test your A1C. So on this protocol, I completely changed my entire body. I was bloated, and maybe I was a size 10. I was a size 8 in 3 months. Now I'm a size 6. I don't care about size. The side of my body was healthy. And do you want to know what the protocol is?
Of course. That was going to be my next question.
Okay. So it's pretty simple. And you don't need to spend a lot of money. So what is this protocol? It's something I thought I'd never do. First of all, I'm not a big carnivore. I grew up a carnivore, and I was always healthy. But so on this diet, what you do is, it's a very simple, and I don't call it a diet. It's really a way of life. And what it basically is no sugar, none, nothing, nada, okay, and very few carbs. So what it is, it's a low-carb, and I mean very low-carb, medium protein and highish fat diet. And along with that, you do fasting. Now, we've all heard about fasting. It's been in the news, intermittent fasting. So you fast. So you only eat in a 6 or 8 hour window every single day. So you would eat, fast for 18 hours, say. You stop eating at 6 o'clock. You wake up in the morning, 6 a.m., that's 12 hours. At lunchtime, 12 o'clock, that's 18 hours. You basically have your dinner. You skip breakfast. Yeah, it goes against what your grandma said, breakfast being the most important meal of the day. And you have lunch. You have a very nice lunch, and you have dinner, and then you start over. Okay? So on this protocol, what you eat is you just have about 20 carbs, depends on the person. And then you have about 60 grams of protein, any kind of protein you want. Carnivore works very well. You can have chicken. You can have fish. This is not a vegan diet. By the way, when I ate a vegan or plant-based diet, I ended up in the hospital with diverticulitis. I used to think that was the be-all, end-all. You know, as I've grown, I've realized there isn't one diet for everybody. But this worked for me, and it will work for 90% of the people. Okay, so let's throw in something else. So we are eating 6 to 8 hours a day. You can choose. And on top of that, we're fasting. We're doing the fasting. We're eating. But on this particular protocol, you then add in 2 days a week where you have all day fasting or more. So on Monday, on Sundays, I stop eating at 6. I don't eat all day Monday, and then I eat lunch Tuesday. That's about 42 hours. You can also go 36. So 2 days a week, I don't eat for 36 to 42 hours. Some people do 3 days a week. I did 2. And why am I doing that? And how does this work? When you are not eating, when you are fasting, your sugar level goes down after a certain amount of time. You eat your food, you process the sugar, and after that, your body starts burning the excess sugar in your liver and all over your body. The only way to get rid of type 2 diabetes is to eliminate the sugar from your body that's always been there. If you have a test and your sugar is high, it's because there's too much sugar circulating in your body. And when you fast, your body has time to repair itself and get rid of the sugar. On the longer fast, it's like it revs it up. You can even do fasts that are longer than 36 hours, but we won't get into that. All I did was fast 2 days a week. And that's basically what I did. And it was quite amazing. It reversed my fatty liver. Now, there are books and diets out there that say, eat fat, get thin. I used to think that was kind of malarkey. It really isn't. But with that being said, you know, everybody is different. This protocol works. I was not going to take metformin. So I'm going back and forth. You can reel me in if you want. My alternative was to take a drug to lower my sugar or do this protocol. There was nothing in between. When you take those drugs to lower your sugar, all it does is take the sugar and push it into your organs. It doesn't get rid of it. When you fast and eat in small windows, your body actually gets rid of the sugar and it's gone. So this is not a diet. This is a way of life. You need to eat.
Why couldn't you do this diet and also be a vegetarian? Like, why couldn't you do the intermittent fasting and still not have too many carbs, you know, eat, you know, you can eat your legumes and for tofu and other.
There are ways to do it. And you can talk to Dr. Aswari. You know, I'm not a doctor, but I understand it. And because I'm a chef type, you know, I don't call myself a chef, you know, but I've commanded kitchens, so I guess I am. But there are ways to do it, vegan, and there are ways, but the body responds better when you eat animal protein. I tried going vegan, plant-based, to reverse my sugar with another functional doctor. He told me it was going to be hard, and it was, because me personally, I can't eat enough. I can't get enough nutrients from the food to reverse the diabetes. And if you're going to eat all those complex carbohydrates and all the foods you need to sustain you on a plant-based or vegan diet, that's going to raise your sugar. You can't eat all the beans and things. They'll raise your sugar. They're carbohydrates. So the only way to really get rid of type 2 diabetes or keep it from coming back, this is not a one-time thing. Like, I've read every single diet book, every single protocol. I could recite them to you in detail. This is very different. This is a way of life. So why do I eat this way? You know, why am I doing this? It's because when I eat this way, I actually feel better. You know, I don't have any brain fog. I don't have any problems at all. It gets rid of all the bloating. It gets rid of brain fog. It gets rid of cravings. And when you eat sugar and carbs, they're basically your body responds in the same way. I could have a chocolate bar next to a baguette and eat them both. My body will respond the same way, even if it's whole grain and wonderful, you know, artisanal bread, my body is going to react the same way it would to a chocolate bar. And when you're prone to type 2 diabetes, and I am, You can't eat that way because eventually your A1C will spike, and that will cause metabolic syndrome. That's a whole vicious cycle. So I basically had metabolic syndrome without realizing it. My cholesterol was high. It was causing my blood pressure to go up. My sugar, but sugar is the culprit. And I have learned through working and reading with doctors, right, that a very large percentage of the population on planet Earth under 18 already is pre-diabetic or diabetic. Children are not tested for this. And with all the carbs and sugar in our diets, people are getting diabetes at an alarming rate. In Asia, where people are thin and always look healthy, a lot of the Asian population, there is a dramatic rise in diabetes because people are eating more sugar and processed. The rice is not the same. A lot of the products are not the same. We live in a world where carbs and sugar give us pleasure. And this coronavirus, that during this virus, that's all everybody's eating. It's cheap. It stays on the shelf. We're all having rice and pasta, and a lot of people can't take it. And so what's happening is now people's sugar levels are going through the roof. And you think, oh, my sugar won't go up if I don't have cake. You know, I'll just have a little pasta. I'll have this and that. But really, once you're diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, you will always have it unless you do something dramatic. It's not just about exercise. Exercise helps. We know that. Vigorous exercise. But you really,
I think eating well as your lifestyle before you get diabetes so that you don't get diabetes is really the key, is to try to keep yourself healthy.
Totally, ahead 100%. 100%. If you have,
so, totally. I just am so conscious of the detrimental impact that the eating of meat has, not just on so many bodies, but on the planet, that trying to encourage people to eat less of it is so much a part of where I come from. Even though I don't expect everyone to be vegan or plant-based, I really, I'm trying to encourage people to eat less meat because it's so detrimental to the planet on so many levels.
I totally get that, and I was a true believer in that until I did the research. Just like not everything is always available to the public in other areas, there are ways to sustainably have animals on the planet to feed people, and I do believe that. I was borderline staunch plant-based way of life, and because of what it did to the planet, but I don't have time to get into it. You don't have to eat. There are ways to do it. You really need to talk to Dr. Asfari. So I did this, and now that I have reached my goals, I stay on it, but I eat a lot less animal protein. I eat more fish and only sustainable fish. There isn't that much left. But there are ways that you eat, and you can do tofu. Just tofu doesn't really have enough protein. I'm not going to get into it because I'm not a nutritionist. At all, what I have always done is take the protocols that doctors give me and teach classes in food as medicine, which I have done now for about 5 or 6 years. So they give me the protocol. I work with individuals who have lots of different health issues and have different protocols to be on. The majority of my clients have been almost plant-based with just a little bit of protein. Now I eat mostly vegetables. I mean, I will tell you that my majority of my food is vegetable. And I don't eat a lot of protein. I just eat a little bit, but it regulates my body and my sugar. You can eat healthy. People look at me as the prime example of the most healthy eater they know. And nobody could believe that I got type 2 diabetes, but it runs in my family. And so it was inevitable. I had gestational diabetes, which is a precursor to type 2 diabetes. So anybody who's pregnant has... I knew back then, and it wasn't a weight issue. It's just something in my system that I inherited. But I do believe we can change our DNA with our diet. And if people can do it with plant-based diets, it works for them. But for people who have type 2 diabetes already, or if it's inherent in their gene, eventually it's going to pop its ugly head. Even if you just eat beans and vegetables and all healthy things. Healthy is relative. It's what's healthy to you, and everybody's body reacts differently to food.
When I learned about the elimination diet, and I finally met Dr. Younger, and we've become friends, and I've done projects with him. He said to me, eat this elimination diet, you'll live forever. Well, I didn't live forever, and eventually, it didn't work for me, and eventually I got sick on it because I was eating beans, and I was having these shakes that had all kinds of protein, whey protein, a pea protein. Pea protein, which a lot of vegans and plant-based people love, doesn't agree with me. It's too starchy. It attacks my system, or literally my system knows it's getting attacked and goes crazy. So everybody today has stomach issues, everybody over the age of 50 that I know, everybody. And the way to fix your stomach issue is to find out how you react to certain foods. This diet, for people that have this is what I'm focused on now, type 2 diabetes. It seems like everybody I meet today has type 2 diabetes, and people are dying from it left and right. It's huge.
Yeah. Especially, it seems to be, you know, really one of the precursors for getting the COVID-19.
Exactly. Really, morbidity is the number one. And morbidity usually comes type 2 diabetes. Mine did not. I mean, I wasn't morbidly obese. I mean, I was a little bit overweight, but not that much. But people that are the number one killer, you're right, is really overweight. But those people have diabetes, and they have high blood pressure as well. And all of this, so metabolic syndrome is usually high cholesterol, diabetes, and high blood pressure, diabetes, and a fatty liver. All of those things. So if you get one, you'll usually get another one. They all go hand in hand. And a lot of people that are passing from the virus that are younger, and people are saying, well, why are they passing away? I have lots of doctor friends that give me this information. We all have different conflicting information. But what I've heard from my friends in the business, doctors and administrators and the hospitals, is that, yes, it's the morbid obesity, but it's also diabetes. It's underlying problems that people don't realize they have. So many people have type 2 diabetes. So a lot of doctors don't even do the A1C test, which is a very important test. It shows what your sugar has been for the last 3 months. It's not your fasting number. They also, doctors used to say, okay, it could be 105, it can go up. That's your fasting sugar. Really, it should be much lower. But but with COVID virus, the most important thing is to get slim and not eat the sugar and carbs. Or don't try to go on a diet, but just try to cut back on the sugar and the carbs. It's very hard because that's the happiness factor for everybody, their sugar and carbs. It makes us happy. But once you go on this way of life, this protocol, after 10 days, you absolutely don't crave the sugar or the carbs. For me, it takes about 10 days. You just have to get through it. And the fat that I eat actually keeps me full, and the protein. You don't need to eat tons, you eat fat. You can eat lots of fat and probably do it with a plant-based diet. It just works very well for diabetics for some reason, having animal protein. You don't need a lot.
Uh-huh.
It's hard to talk to someone who is plant-based and get them to understand, because I was there at one time. I understand. But I have to have this vibrant health now. That was my goal in life. I meditated on it for years. What did I always want? Vibrant health.
I know from working with so many people that you said before, there is no one diet for everybody. You know, people really do have to listen to their bodies, and, you know, and genetics definitely plays a strong part in our health. And with food as medicine, as you're saying, you really can take that control back, and you don't have to let the genetics run your life, but you do have to acknowledge that different people have different tendencies that need extra attention. And so, finding out, paying attention to your body, finding out what sets your body off, is important to know. I know you mentioned diverticulitis. You know, I've had occasional bouts with that as well. And, as much as I love quinoa, for instance, I know if I eat a lot of quinoa, that can set me off and not be good for me.
Exactly.
So I limit that.
You know your trigger points. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I love quinoa, and it's such a great Well, it's not really.
I lived on quinoa. I lived on it, and I came up with all these recipes to use it. I made quinoa everything, desserts, and you name it. But yeah. I can't eat it either because it will set me off. And nuts. I can't eat nuts. Nuts are the number one staple if you're plant-based. I love nuts more than anything. And but nuts also, you know, there's a lot of things about nuts. A lot of nuts are not healthy for anybody. But like you say, everybody's metabolism and body is different. My family, I have three boys in the house. My husband's the third. They can eat anything. Their numbers are great. And they all exercise. They all exercise a lot. But they can eat anything. I still make them cakes and cookies and things. I mean, I try to do it healthy. For this coronavirus, I'm making cookies for the healthcare workers because that's what they want. I'm making hundreds of cookies a week.
Yeah.
But really, like you say, you really have to know your body and get tested. And there are lots of ways to get tested now to find out what your weak points are.
You know, when we were talking before about the healthcare workers, you know, there's certain times where, you know, you have to put some of your knowledge to the side and do what makes people happy, because that's, you know, the love aspect. And I think sometimes when the love is in there, you know, the negative impacts don't penetrate as much. It's kind of like protected in this.
I agree 1,000%. I believe in food as medicine and food being love. Food is love. And like you, I love cooking for people, and I love cooking with love and intention. And when I teach my classes and when I go into restaurants, and I've redone restaurants a lot, I would get the staff together and say, you really want to be here. You have to cook with love and think about the people you're cooking for. But take back to the home. When you cook for your family, it's with total love. It starts out with your children, your family, your friends. When I invite people to my table, while I'm buying the food, I'm thinking about the people and what they might like. And when I'm making the food, I'm thinking about their faces when they eat it. And you're right. When I go to a restaurant, I can tell if the chef smokes. I could tell if the chef is happy just by the way the food tastes. Yeah, and if you cook with love, yes, it's healing. And if you're eating something, maybe, right, that's really smart, and I do agree. If you're having pasta, don't say, oh, God, I shouldn't be eating this. Say, oh, this pasta's wonderful. It's keeping me going. It's delicious. This butter, this cheese, it's making me feel so good. I'm not even thinking about the fact I don't have a job. You know, it's true. You have to really think, set the intention of whatever you're doing and with eating. I totally, that's good. You're very cool.
You know, even with, you know, I've done for cancer patients. I mean, sometimes, you know, they need that comfort food. You know, just give them a bowl of pasta, you know, like you said, with butter and salt and just, you know, like baby food, you know, and just wrap them in that blanket of love. And, you know, it's really important.
And eating
well, food is medicine. I mean, I'm so with you when it comes to that. And you know, really... I think the key that you've touched on with the intermittent fasting is really starting to come up more and more with people being aware that you need to eat less and not eat it so often and give your body a rest. You know, just think about your organs. You know, if they don't get a time to revitalize, you know, they just need a rest time. And if you're eating from the minute you wake up in the morning to the minute you go to bed at night, that, you know, 6 to 8 hours of sleep time is not enough for your organs to rest.
Absolutely. So, if you just did the intermittent fasting alone, even if you ate for 8 hours and fasted for 16, over a period of time, your body will reset itself. But it's during that little window, you have to watch it and really just eat very low carb and almost no sugar. When I talk carbs, so the problem with the plant-based diet, there are a lot of carbs. So you can do the plant-based diet. You can only have 20 carbs a day, and that's it really when you're trying to reverse things. It's not about weight. You know, it's about the inside of your body. But if you can even do 2 hours a week where you fast for 24 hours, 2 days a week with the fasting, you will see dramatic results. And you lose more inches than pounds. I've probably lost, I don't know, maybe 30 pounds from October 4th to now. But I went from a a size 6 with a rounded tummy to a size 10 with a rounded tummy to a size 6 with a flat stomach, literally flat. Because all that carbs and sugar bloats you. You get all kinds of things like candida, and sugar just wreaks havoc in your body. Nobody should be eating any processed sugar. You have to watch the fruit, too. On this diet, you can eat this way of life, very little fruit. No, we're not going to go there. But so for the COVID virus, I'm trying to do a lot and urge people to do what they can to help other people by cooking for them, doing things for people, shopping for people. There's a lot you can do.
So, Carrie, we're just about out of time, believe it or not. I can't believe it. But can you share with people, you know, if they have a question, are you open to them emailing you with a question?
Absolutely. My email is alwayscarryon. That's always, but carry is spelled C-A-R-R-I-E, on, alwayscarry, C-A-R-R-I-E, on, at AOL.com.
Wonderful, wonderful.
And if you have any questions, you can also call the Chung Institute of Metabolic Healing. And they are absolutely amazing. And the doctor there is Dr. Andrew Oswari, O-S-W-A-R-I. He's one of the few doctors in this area that knows how take you through this protocol. And he has all kinds of groups, and he's doing it virtually. You don't have to travel to South Jersey. He himself had metabolic issues, and that's how he found this way of life. And I was very fortunate to find him. You know, it's not for everybody, but if you have type 2 diabetes and you have any questions, call me or call Dr. Oswari. You can actually talk to him before meeting Kim. He's very open. He's not a traditional kind of, you know, it takes 5 years to get an appointment. You can be very successful.
Thank you, Carrie. Have a great rest of the week. And everyone who's joined us today, thank you so much. My guest has been Carrie Weiss. And I am just so happy to be here with all of you. Have a great rest of the week, and I will see you again next week. Bye for now.
Lots of love.